Peace, love and rock and roll. Francie Conway, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How's it going?
Good. Great to chat to you. Thank you so much for taking the call.
Lovely track there.
And it's not often we get such a positive message, maybe, in that style of music, is it?
Well, I mean, it's a very fortunate track that we actually... It's a track that that I worked on with David Richards, the producer of Queen, and David Bowie, and Iggy Pop, Michael Jackson, etc., etc. And David invited me to join him in the famous Mountain Studio, Queen Studio in Montreux in Switzerland, 2009, to maybe... we knew each other from the 80s, and he said, like, why not come out to Montreux, and maybe we'll try and write a couple of songs. He'd produce some of the greatest records of all time, and but he'd never kind of done the songwriting thing. It was always the production. So, and he said, if nothing happens, we'll just have a nice week, and we'll have a couple of nice meals and stuff, and if something happens, you never know where we'll go. So this was actually the first co-write between Greg, between David and I.
And it's been well received.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's turned out to be quite a bit more special because David and I worked on quite a few tracks. And in the recording of this track, for example, I had been in Switzerland and I'd played the big Lausanne Festival, but I had a 12-string guitar with me and I had a mandolin. And David said, I think we should have some electric guitar at the intro. So, and I said, well, I don't have an electric guitar. So he asked his assistant to set up an electric guitar in the playing area. So a couple of minutes later, I went down and I was chatting to Jule, and I said, I never knew that he was into guitars and stuff. Like, and there was a lot of drum kits around, a lot of keyboards from the Queen setup. And he said, no, he said, this is not that David, it's the other David. He said, it's David Bowie's guitar.
So we're listening on that track to David Bowie's, you playing David Bowie's guitar.
Basically, I mean, at the time it was quite an honour, and now I feel incredibly blessed, Greg.
This would have been prior to his passing, obviously.
This would have been 2010.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing was that, like, you know, it's you know, I don't know if you're into synchronicity or not, but it's like, I remember David talking to me about how difficult it was to finish off the Queen album Made in Heaven after Freddie passed away. And, you know, the thing was that, you know, that was a huge record to finish off. This track that you just heard, David continued on working on it when he got very unwell in 2012 and passed away in 2013. But he continued on in the pure Queen fashion, working right till the end.
Yeah.
And then the other part of their team, Mr. Bowie, ended up doing exactly the same thing, you know. And I'm the one being left with the last of this whole sequence of tracks from the incredible Mountain Studio, Montreux in Switzerland.
And a lot of these unreleased as of yet.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first track that we're actually bringing out from it, Greg. We just did the video for it last week. And so this is the first track of the sequence of songs from David and I that we're actually making public.
Did it cross your mind not to finish this work?
I have to be honest with you. When the grief set in, yeah. I wasn't able to go back to the recordings. And then when the other David passed away in January, that almost finished me completely. And then in March, I went back to Mountain Studio to collect the files of the material that David and I had been working on. I brought them home, put them into a studio in Dublin, and it was only around June, July, we started kind of opening up the book and listening, and there was an incredible amount of stuff.
It's a treasure chest, isn't it?
It's a treasure trove. Greg, we've almost like 9 tracks in there, you know.
What kind of artists are on those, Ryan?
Well, you see, I mean, this is going to surprise you, know. You know the recording you just heard?
Mm-hmm.
It's only David and I playing all the instruments.
Right.
Because we could.
If you've got the talent, why bring anybody else?
Well, you see, the thing is, it was like boys being boys and just having fun in the studio. You know, I mean, we were having great crack, and the engineer was going like, you know, Jewel, with the assistants were going like, you know, I mean, the guys, you've been doing this all your life for a living, and we were going, uh-huh, that's kind of, you know...
I'd say that's a very important part of your time now. I'd say it was important at the time, but even now, as you say, with the passing and everything associated with that.
Well, I think there's been a huge sense of starting to put closure on the whole thing by actually releasing this, because what happened was that I was going to the studio and I would maybe work for an hour on the material, then I would hear David's voice in the cans, and that was me gone for the day. It was over, you know. And it was in August, and I'd remembered I got a message from David around sometime in 2013 saying, I've sent you a track, Timeless, a possible hit. You know, and I mean, for the guy who made Under Pressure and all these incredible records, but there was nothing with it. So I called the studio at the end of August, where the files were, and I said to Matt Kelligan, could you check if there's anything from around this date? And in the true Queen fashion, nothing was titled, because they never put titles on anything in case the files got into, you know,
the wrong hands. But
around that date, and Matt clicked on a thing, and there was nothing on it, and suddenly David had worked away on this track to finish this track for us. So we only found this in the end of August this year.
Amazing stuff.
It is amazing story, isn't it?
I don't have the time to even scratch the surface of your career.
And actually, I've forgotten most of it, Greg.
Just as well, then. Because my research isn't that good.
I've had some great times in Donegal and some great friends up there. And if any of them are listening today, they know who they are. And I'm saying hi, guys. You know.
But people would know you from your own work.
From you, yeah.
Of course, your album. I'd say many people still have your album "Wake Up" still sitting in the house.
Yeah, I mean that was a surprise. Actually, that was recorded in Switzerland as well. And I think we had, from the 10 songs on that album, Greg, I think we had 7 covers worldwide from that album.
Well, that was what I was going to ask you. As an artist, recording artist, songwriter, producer, and what have you, like, do you separate them out? Which gives you most satisfaction?
Well, you know, at one time it was actually performing, you know, that I actually enjoyed more. But now I've kind of started to kind of enjoy all the different, because I really like being in the studio. I love playing in the studio. And, like, next month I'm doing a couple of gigs with Christy Dignam.
Brilliant. Vaslan, of course.
You know, and I've got the big event coming up down in Kerry, the celebration of Christy Hennessy and songwriters. This is the 6th year, so I'm very involved in trying to promote up and coming artists as well.
Is this a conscious thing, giving back now, or have you done that throughout your own career? I mean, giving back to the industry, you know, helping other people, maybe giving them the foot up or the break that you've enjoyed over the years.
Well, you see, Greg, when I came back to live in Ireland, I was approached by the Arts Council to know would I go out to the it was at the very infancy, the Rock School in Ballyfermot. And it was one of the first rock schools in Ireland, or in Europe, should I say. But there was no template to work off or anything else. And I went out, I said I'd go out for a couple of weeks until they found somebody. Mm-hmm. And I felt quite passionate about it because, I mean, I thought, you know, I mean, when I left Ireland in the 80s, and I remember signing to RCA Records in London, which was a huge thing for an Irish guy,
yeah,
or
massive.
Anybody to sign to RCA Records. But, I mean, I didn't even know what a recording contract was. You know what I mean? You know, I'd never been inside the door of a professional studio. I hadn't an absolute idea about how the industry worked.
Did that help, do you think? Because you went in, you know, without influence, with an open mind, or did it leave you open to perhaps maybe being taken advantage of? I'm not trying to make something negative if it wasn't, but did that innocence, you could call it, I suppose, help or hinder?
Well, I suppose it helped, because I was very fortunate. I was with incredible people. I was with the guys from The Zombies and Argent, and Tim Rennick from Pink Floyd. Mm. That was the kind of the team. And I can still remember, I mean, the first day going to Wood Green, to Livingston Studio there, and I remember I was so nervous because I was going to actually sing with my heroes. Think about that, Greg. It's like I was going to sing with the guys that I've been, Hold Your Head Up, you know, Time of the Season, She's Not There, all these incredible tracks, and the Pink Floyd stuff, and it was like, and I saw these 4 guys at the side of the road digging a hole. We were stopped at traffic lights, And I remember looking at them thinking, do you know, Jesus, would I be better off digging that hole now than going into the studio? Do you know what I mean?
Yes. They say you should never meet your heroes.
And I did, and I have actually been one of the ones, Greg, that was very fortunate to actually play with them, you know. Mm. And that was from all the rock side. And when I came back to live in Ireland, the Furies actually ended up approaching me to record one of my songs. Dolores Cain recorded one of my songs. And then I started getting into folk music, and I actually toured with the Furies. And then I continued on working with Finbar Fury. And I ended up recording with Ronnie Drew and playing with Ronnie Drew. So I got a kind of an insight at the top level again of folk music, and you know, so I've now developed a passion for that acoustic music as well as the more electric rock music.
And I was going to say, you've played with all the greats, including Alistair Campbell. What a peculiar pairing that would have been. That was back in your busking days, is it?
How do you know that?
I do my research, Francie.
Uh-huh.
That's the Tony Blair's former director of communications, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Well, he wasn't his
Not
director
then.
Of communications at that time, you know.
Yeah.
You can imagine my shock when I was actually, my son became quite unwell to meet 18 years ago, and I ended up going off the road then for about 10 years. But I remember I was in he was in Enable Ireland in Sandymount, and there were 2-hour sessions, so I would go up to a little cafe and open up the local newspapers and kind of just spend the 2 hours sitting there drinking coffee, reading the paper. And I opened up the centre spread, and there I saw Alistair, and there's the whole thing about Tony Blair and everything, and I went, holy God, what happened to him?
Was he any good?
What?
Musically.
well, Alistair, he was very clever.
Right.
I mean, Alistair used to have we first met in Brussels in a place called the Double Diamond, and Alistair used to dress up with the Scottish, he had the kilt and everything, and he used to have the bagpipes. So Alistair, you know, we kind of, we became friends, and, you know, my voice, Alistair reckoned, worked better indoors because it meant people could actually hear the quality of the voice and we'd get more money out of them. So then Alistair would look up the newspapers. I mean, he was always clever, and he would know, there's going to be a queue at this movie tonight, there's going to be a queue at that movie. And then he picked out a couple of restaurants for me to sing on the way back to our office, which was the Double Diamond pub in Brussels.
Amazing. Francie, when you hear some of the songs you've worked on now, some of the real classic songs, the songs that will be listened to long after myself and yourself have gone to our eternal reward, and you were there and you saw how they were layered, and perhaps you heard, you know, someone pipe up and say, no, I think we should do this, and then that becomes perhaps the most recognisable thing from that track, and you know all that background. It must be an amazing bit of knowledge to have.
Well, it is, and the thing is that, and it's funny that a lot of the recording sessions, I mean, I remember, for example, we had a huge hit, Greg, with a song called To the Edge of Time all over Europe. I mean, it ended up being recorded in French and Italian and German. It was like, it was just one of these songs, you know? And the funny thing about it, I had written it as a slow ballad on the piano. And I was at a party in Geneva one night, and a friend who'd heard the song said, Francie, would you play that song? And I said, well, I've never really played in guitar, but I'd had a couple of glasses of wine, so I thought, sure, you know, why not have a bit of crack with it? And I started playing it at a different tempo. I started playing it in a 4-4, maybe 120, 125 beats per minute. And suddenly the song started to sit really well, you know. And then I got into the chorus, and I went side by side, and I could hear somewhere in the background a backing harmony is going side by side. And, you know, suddenly it was, I asked the people that were around, you know, could you just try this backing vocals, you know? They all started singing. Christian Gilaire from the record label was at the party. He tapped me on the shoulder and he said, I want you in the office on Monday at 11 o'clock. I think we have our follow-up single.
And that's how it happens.
And then they invited Smokey, the band Smokey from Britain, to come in and do those backing vocals. And nobody better than Smokey to do backing vocals like that, you know.
Mm.
And then the record just went off on a journey of its own, you know.
Organically, and maybe that's the way it works, you know. You can't necessarily sit down and say, right, we've got 2-hour studio time and knock something out.
Well,
it can be done, but, you know.
It can, but the thing is, again, it's like everything else. You know, you have to bring something. You know, there has to be a sparkle of something. There has to be, you know, I'm a great believer in the, you know, getting the idea for the song, the angle of the song, and then, you know, giving the song time to find out what's best for the song. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like your kids. You have to give them time. You have to let them mature. You have to let them develop a little bit, and then do your best for them before you send them off out in their way and give them that little pat in the back, you know?
Now, we are going to talk and listen to the song Wild Atlantic Way. Obviously, that's been huge for us here in Donegal, all up the West Coast. Tell us the background to this song. We'll play out with that, Francie.
Well, I mean, the background for this song is I would have a few, because I come from, I don't know if you know or not, but I come from Tralee originally, you know?
Oh, I know everything.
Yeah. Oh, do you know?
No, I don't. No, because I was reading up on you and how your career, your parents owned a pub in Tralee, didn't they?
They did, but yeah. I have to tell you now, when I actually tuned into you at 10 o'clock this morning and I thought, Marion doesn't sound as sexy as she does on the radio, as she does on the phone, you know. And I was wondering, how does Marion do that, you know?
I'm trying to work out, is that a compliment or not? I'll have to get back to you on it.
Well, I mean, the last time that I walked into the studio and let her Kenny, there was a DJ. I was in there with a friend of mine called Mickey Hart, Mickey Joe Hart.
Yes, of course, brilliant musician.
It was, Mickey is wonderful. And it was a late night show. And I walked in behind Mickey. Mickey was chatting about one of his records or something, and I just happened to be in Donegal with Mickey. We were staying in a hotel in town there. And your man, Mickey, introduced me, and your man, Packy, just looked at me, and he shook my hand, and he said, I thought you were dead. I mean...
Sorry to disappoint you.
I'm entitled to be able to have a bit of crack with the people from Donegal.
Indeed, you are, indeed. Now,
I would have a great affiliation with the West Coast.
Yes.
And I wanted to write a song, Greg, for a long time about kind of the West Coast of Ireland. But I wanted to, you know, the imagery that I wanted to use, I didn't want to kind of go about like, you know, growing up kind of kicking football around Kerry, you know, going in a caravan up around the West Coast. I mean, loads of the lads, Christy and Ronnie and Finn and all the lads would have done this over the years. And the difference is they would have stayed in those caravans and camping sites. I didn't. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was trying to find an imagery that would kind of, and I thought like the biblical imagery of the fisherman is something that always attracts me, you know? You know, and I mean, when I go to Donegal, for example, I would be drawn to go out to the coast. I would be drawn to look at the boats. I would always want to go and look at the fishermen. I would want to kind of find out what locally is happening. And
yeah, what it is to you, really, what the West Coast is to you, that's what it has to be about, doesn't it?
Really, and the thing was, I was working on the song, and I had kind of like God's Own Country, Living on Our Shoreline. I had a couple of different titles, you know, and I had like my Atlantic Home kind of. I had different working titles for the song, and then I came down and all I was missing was one word, and then a friend of mine said, did you hear they're going to do something about something called the Wild Atlantic Way? And I went, sorry, could you say that again? And the word I was missing was wild for my title.
There you go.
So I just put the title in, and then the look of it happened was that, are you aware of Finbar Fury's Lonesome Boatman, Greg?
I am, yes.
I think a lot of people really haven't, that tune has been very endearing for them, hasn't it?
Haunting, it means something.
Yeah, and you know, Finbar over the years, he tried to put some lyrics to that. He put a poem with it called Silent Annie one time. He put the poem before the piece of music. But I think the poem took away from the mystical side of the melody. And so it kind of, you know, he kept it going as the instrumental. And when I was working on this Wild Atlantic Way one evening, I was having dinner and kind of, I was having a glass of wine. I don't know if you're in a relationship or not, but my wife is one of the ones who counts how many glasses of wine you have. Do you know what I mean? I would never know I have two or I have three. Do you know what I mean?
She keeps you in check.
But she will always remind me, is you're having your fourth. And I'm going, oh, did I really? Do you know what I mean? So, Well, that's the Swedish for you. They'll keep an account of everything, you know, and they'll keep you, they want to keep you healthy and well, you know.
Well, she's doing a good job, so we can't criticise her too much.
I suppose so. But anyway, I went upstairs. I said, like, yeah, I just want to do a little bit of work on the song. So I went up to the piano, and I had a little bottle of wine beside the piano, you see. So now I could have my glass that I was kind of denied downstairs. So I started playing God Bless the Fisherman Heading Out to Sea. And then I started playing away, and then I thought, oh, I'll just give a little top up now, but I'll keep playing while I'm topping up. So I started playing The Lonesome Boatman on the left-hand side of the piano and got my little glass of wine with the right. And then suddenly I just went, I was playing The Boatman, and then I just went from The Boatman into God Bless the Fisherman Heading Out to Sea. And I thought, oh my God, this is really working. This is actually, we're heading out to sea. You know?
Yes. There's a pattern here, Francie. It's you having a glass of wine, you sitting at an instrument, your expectations being relatively low, and then something great happening. That's
basically, and my son Rory, my special needs son Rory, who's actually a great friend of Finbar's, I brought him up to listen to it, and he was going, oh, that's lovely, Dad. So I called Finn, and Finn came up with the whistles the day after, and he was in as big a shock as what I was, Greg.
Brilliant. Well, listen, Francie, we're going to play it after the news now, because I don't want to play just a bit of it. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. We could do another hour and still have loads more left. But, Francie Conway, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Thank you very, very much for taking the call this morning.
Thank you, Greg. God bless.
All right, take care. Thank you so much. That is the legend, Francie Conway, and he's worked on all the big tracks, many, many big tracks, all the big artists. We're going to hear his Wild Atlantic Way song.
The fisherman heading out to sea to fill the hold full of dreams for the love of his family. The wild Atlantic way has given us a home. Its rugged, majestic shoreline. The wild Atlantic way say farewell to the harbor hours before dawn. Witness the sunrise reflecting our ancestors' eyes. The wild Atlantic way has given us a home. Its rugged, majestic shore.